it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And over the next hour, we will have a nice cocktail of NFL and postseason baseball, because those are the two biggest things going on right now, at least in my world. We'll start with the Thursday night football matchup between the Steelers and the Bengals, what's been dubbed as the Icy Hot Bowl. The quarterbacks, aged 41 and 40, are going to be two of the oldest players in the league going head-to-head as Aaron Rodgers takes on Joe Flacco. At 7:20, we've got two MLB games on the card today. Game 3 of the NLCS between the Dodgers and Brewers, and Game 4 between the Blue Jays and the Mariners. So, Jenks, I feel like I'm always poking fun at your age. Do you personally like to see it when the, quote, old guys have the spotlight?
Yes, I do, as I drink my coffee. I should have an old cup.
You're insured?
Like old fart. And like, yeah, I sure do. I love these guys. I do, because it gives me hope. You know, I'm trying to embrace my age. It's not easy. You know, when you're in your head, I'm like, yeah, I'm so young. And then you look in the mirror and you're like, no, you're not. You're not young at all. You're old. But it's okay. Well, there are some advantages that come with being older. And so when I see someone who is older, who is doing something at a high level, be it in baseball or any other craft, then, you know, I have a growing appreciation for that, because it's really hard to stay relevant. I think that's the one thing that I always come back to. I was having this conversation with the lovely Catherine, and I was trying to put my finger on it. Like, what is the frustration about aging in any business, in any sport? And I said, it's being relevant. Like, when you're younger, it's easy to be relevant, right? You're totally up to date on pop culture. You know exactly the hottest music. You know the phrases that people are using. You're up to date on everything because you're in it. And then when you get older, trends change, businesses change, vernacular changes, and your life changes to the point where you have responsibilities that are a little bit more, well, not a little bit more, they just take precedence, right? Like, I'm busy building a family, or I'm trying to buy a house, or I'm worried about my retirement, or I'm getting married. And so these things that you used to focus on don't quite have as much attention in your life, or don't get as much attention. And so it's harder to have that relevancy. And so I feel like even in baseball, right, like, it might be more of a physical thing. You know, maybe you do things a different way, but then your talents start to wane a little bit just naturally. Your body can only do it for so long. And I think that's why so many of these athletes, they love the game, but they miss the, no, I can still play this game. I can still do this. And so sometimes they hang on longer than they should because they still want that relevancy. They still want to be a part of it. And I get that.
Yeah. And, like, I feel like I know where you're coming from, even though I'm younger than you. But I am a woman over 35. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, to me, that, like, a man that's 50 and a woman that's 35 is like the same thing.
Yes.
But, like, think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, how many older women do you see in sports broadcasting? Not that many. So, like, Jenks, I feel you. And, like, when I see, like, my counterparts who, like, I'm getting, like, my family ready for the day. I'm, like, doing things around the house and I'm being, like, a trad wife. And then, like, the other girls in this industry are, like, doing these videos where they're, like, scantily clad, and you're like, wow, I am old. So when I poke fun of your age, just know that I am in the same boat.
I appreciate that. But also, to your credit, the beauty of the job that you're doing is that, you know, time is undefeated. No one is young forever. And it's not knocking anyone that's young. If you're young, knock yourself out. But when you develop an actual skill set, as opposed to just making videos where you're scantily clad, and fine, do what you need to do. I'm not hating on that. But that does have a time limit. You know, there is a time when you just can't do it. You can do it. I wouldn't recommend it. But there's a time when there's always going to be someone younger. Always. Always. No matter what. Mm-hmm. So the important thing is you develop a skill set that transcends time or lasts or is sustainable, right? Because if you have a skill, which is hosting a show or handicapping, things like that,
You know, you can do that when you're 30, 40, 50, 60. You can do that at a high level, whereas just posting a video online, again, I'm not knocking anyone. You know, at some point, if you're 38 and you're still posting videos of yourself in a bikini, it's like, you know what? This is probably something you want to pivot away from. So at the very least, you have a skill set that is something that I think is age agnostic.
Yeah, even though I think Paige Spiranak is like around that age, and like she looks damn good. Like I will say, there are advancements that are lengthening that age.
True.
But to parlay this into football, because this is not just a discussion about me and my personal insecurities, is that I kind of saw a parallel between this and the way the quarterback position is now. Because Aaron Rodgers was talking about this with Joe Flacco, because obviously they asked him about Joe Flacco ahead of this week's matchup. And he was saying something about how the quarterback position has changed to where now it's smaller guys, really athletic guys, and you just watch them play and they're like playing almost a different position than what like Joe Flacco plays and what Aaron Rodgers plays. So it feels like Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco are like the prototypical like 2000s quarterback where they throw like really good deep balls, you know, the mechanics are great, and they're true pocket passers. So it's one of those things you just don't see anymore. But I do feel like that style of quarterbacking can keep you in the league longer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's old school, but also there is a place for reading deep and being cerebral, I think, is it, right? If you are cerebral in the National Football League. Yeah, if you know the game and you can deliver the football, you will always have a place. And I think this is why I almost got to this in the last segment. This is why we are seeing a resurgence of guys who were tossed aside and all of a sudden are thriving, like a Baker Mayfield, like a Sam Darnold, like a Daniel Jones, right? At one time or another, all three of these guys were tossed to the scrap heap. But guess what happened? They hung around. They know the game really well. They can deliver the football. They have the arm to do it. And now it's, wow, these guys can play. And it's because, look, some of these guys are more mobile than others, but at the end of the day, they have that common thread, which is we've been around long enough that we understand how to read defenses and we can throw it. And so that certainly applies tonight with Flacco and with Aaron Rodgers as well.
Yeah, I think the question for Flacco is that, does it even matter since he's playing behind such a bad offensive line? And that's kind of what the odds makers think. Mm-hmm. So the Bengals, 5.5-point home dogs here, total of 44. The Steelers come in 4-1. The Bengals just 2-4. So, Jenks, it's a divisional matchup. And usually in divisional matchups, I lean towards the points. And I say, okay, we know how the AFC North plays. Normally these games are really tight. And you see really good defenses. But one side of the coin, the Bengals defense is not even in the realm of good. Like, it's not even in the realm of mediocre. This Bengals defense is bad. I do think it's a solid matchup for the Steelers offense. But I'll say this, like Joe Flacco has surprised people before. I don't think this is going to be one of those instances, but again, 5.5 points in a divisional matchup. Which way do you lean?
I like the Bengals. I actually think I'm going to play it, believe it or not.
Ooh.
Yeah. I just feel like, what is the total on this game? 43.5. Like I like the under as well. I think this is kind of going to be a slog. And even though the Steelers are sitting at, what, 4-1? I feel like that they're a misnomer at 4-1. They're good, but are they this good? Like, what did Double D ask us earlier in the show, earlier this week? Is Pittsburgh the best team or one of the best teams in the AFC? I don't think they are. Like, they're benefiting from a really bad division. So, their best win of the season in New England against the Patriots, that's a good win. They beat the Vikings with Carson Wentz at quarterback. That's their other big win. But I just feel like if you look at the Steelers' offense, they're good, but they're not necessarily dynamic. And the Bengals are going to get back Shamar Stewart in this game. It looks like Trey Hendrickson is going to try and play after he got banged up last week. That's going to help them. But also, I think the Bengals are going to turn this into a slow-paced, classic AFC North battle, right? So the problem with Cincinnati is they've been playing from behind almost all season long. And that's why they've had, you know, Joe Flacco, you know, trying to sling it around, which is not a recipe for winning football games. But in this game, especially in Cincinnati, I think the Bengals are going to try and run the ball. I don't think they're going to be playing from behind, at least, you know, behind 14 points or something like that. If it's a touchdown, fine. They can stay with the game plan. But it feels like Cincinnati is the right side. And I can't believe I'm saying this. Joe Flacco in the second half last week was very good. Like, he was very good relative to what we've seen at quarterback with Jake Browning. So I think sort of learning that offense and being in it another week will allow Cincinnati to keep this close. I'm just not sold on the Steelers being 5.5-point favorites in a divisional battle.
I think that's what I can't get past is like the 5.5 points. Because let me put this very bluntly. I do not think the Bengals are a good team. I think they have some major flaws on that defense, the offensive line, like I said, especially when you have a older quarterback. That is not a recipe for success. But like you said, Joe Flacco did play a good second half against the Packers. The problem was it felt like it was like garbage time. So I don't know how much stock you put into that. He threw it 45 times last week.
I know.
So I don't know if they can establish the run, especially against a Steelers defense that has not been a steel curtain, but they've not been one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. And that honor belongs to the Bengals, who, if you look at any fantasy metrics or anything, the Bengals' defense against the run has not been good, giving up the second most rush yards to opposing running backs. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they have been playing in these really negative game scripts, so teams just run the ball on them. But if you're looking at props in this one, Jenks, I feel like the player that has kind of caught my attention in this one is DK Metcalf. But what I'm worried about is buying a stock at its highest. Because we've seen back-to-back games where DK Metcalf has absolutely exploded. 126 yards against the Vikings and 95 against the Browns. So his prop is sitting around, let's see, 61.5. And I feel like I played this almost very similarly with Stephon Diggs, where I said, oh, Stephon Diggs is absolutely taken off in the last two games. And then he had a dud of a game, simply because I feel like Drake May is very good at spreading the ball around. Maybe you could say the same for Aaron Rodgers. But, man, DK Metcalf is such like a physical specimen, and especially since the Bengals have not been good at defending number one receivers, that I feel like this would be a solid play. Like 61.5, especially with somebody with high-end potential where he has all these long catches. Against the Vikings, he had an 80-yard catch. So it's not going to surprise me if DK Metcalf has a huge game. And remember, he was one of the first receivers that Aaron Rodgers was working out with. So it makes sense that they have developed a nice little connection.
I think that's a good play. I'll tell you another play that I'm thinking about. God, I don't know. So we were talking to Brad Evans yesterday. You don't need caffeine if you're Brad Evans. That guy just like runs hot, man. It's amazing. So he was talking about Chase Brown, former Illinois running back. And man, I don't know if I like this or not. Maybe I'm going to talk myself out of it on air. But his rushing total is set at 43.5. He has not eclipsed this number since the second game of the season. So you're like, why would you play this? But here's the thing. If you look at the Bengals, I mentioned this before, it's because they've been playing from behind the entire time. So instead of handing the football off, then they've had to throw. Be it Jake Brown or Joe Flacco, they're constantly having to throw the football to catch up, to catch up, to catch up. So this is about game script for me. I think it's going to be a closer game. I like the Bengals and the points. Because of that, I don't think Cincinnati is going to have to throw the ball all over the field. I think they'll be able to run the ball somewhat against Pittsburgh here. So if that happens, then I think Chase Brown can eclipse his total. So here's the thing. The last time he eclipsed his total was against the Jags. Why? Because they were in that game against the Jags. They won that game outright. He had 16 carries for 47 yards. If you think the Steelers are going to cover this number and run away with this thing, and you can make a case for that because the Bengals are bad, then you don't want to bet this prop. But if you think it's going to be close, wouldn't you rather run the ball as opposed to just putting the ball in Joe Flacco's hands and saying, win this game for us? Yeah, keep it on the ground, keep it close. Chew up yardage, chew up time off the clock. So I would look at Chase Brown over 43.5. But the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, I don't want to put all my chips in on the Bengals. Do you know what I mean?
It just feels like a tough one, just simply because there's not a ton of ammo to support it. The fact that he's only gone over this number once, I am not saying it can't happen. I am just saying, like, I don't think this is going to be a positive game script. Like, I still think they're going to be playing from behind. Maybe they won't be, but it's just, it's one of those things where I just can't build a strong enough case for Chase Brown, where his floor is really low.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll talk it out. All right, coming up next segment, switching gears to baseball. We have a couple of games on the slate. Dodgers, Brewers, Mariners, Blue Jays. We'll give you our best bets for both of them next on the Daily Tip.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
For starting your morning with us here on the Daily Tip. Jenks, as I was saying, it feels like an ode to the old guys tonight, where we have the Icy Hot Bowl going on in Thursday Night Football. Aaron Rodgers, Joe Flacco, both over the age of 40. And tonight in the ALCS, we have Max Scherzer, aged 41, who's going to be starting for the Blue Jays. And it's wild because if you think postseason matters, like, or postseason experience matters, he has seven LCS appearances. He's played in seven LCSs, like League Championship Series, with all these different teams. And so, you know, for somebody who's won two World Series, you're like, okay, the moment is not going to be too bright for him. But also, he hasn't pitched in a month. He had a disastrous September, going 0-3 with a 10-2-0 ERA. So it's one of those tough things to balance where you say, okay, the moment's never going to be too big for somebody who's as competitive as Max Scherzer, but maybe the stuff just isn't there anymore for Max Scherzer. Like, there is a reason that he wasn't even on the postseason roster for the ALDS. But now he's put in this position. You know, the Blue Jays could really use a big performance out of him. But it's just one of those, like, volatile factors that when you're handicapping a game, it just has so many layers to it.
Yeah, that's the tough thing. And looking at this yesterday, I like the over in this game. But I looked up and I was like, how old is Max now? 38? 39? I was like, oh, he's 41. I mean, credit to him. This guy's a Hall of Famer. And we love Max here in D.C. because he helped get us a World Series title. And he's just such a competitor, like the ultimate competitor. Mm-hmm. So looking at this game, and look, Max Scherzer has not been great this season, but he is rested. And also, one thing I love about these old guys is that they have a way of sort of pulling it together and giving it one final run in a big moment and maybe delivering. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think that's going to happen in this game, but also I'm not going to be surprised if Max Scherzer, with some rest in a big moment, like, delivers a stellar performance because he has that in him, and also he absolutely has that big moment postseason experience. I don't think I'm banking on that tonight, but he has it in him. There's no question about that.
Right. I think for me, like, his high-end stuff just has not been there. Like, the strikeout stuff. This is somebody who used to have, like, some of the most dominant stuff in Major League Baseball. So my hypothesis is that he can give up a couple runs, but, like, to his testament, that's not going to rattle him. Whereas you have some of these younger pitchers who are like, oh, my God, this guy is falling. I gave up a leadoff home run. I don't think that's going to wear on him too much. And I don't think they're expecting, you know, like, seven shutout innings from Max Scherzer. All they're asking for him to do is give them a chance. And the way that this Blue Jays offense is hitting the ball, maybe he just needs to be mediocre. And this one, if you continue to put up, you know, double-digit run totals for the Blue Jays. So it's interesting in so many regards. But I do think he's going to give up a couple runs. Like, I know you had mentioned to me maybe taking a total in this game. So let's get into it. Game four, the ALCS, Mariners with a 2-1 series lead. But the Blue Jays stormed back yesterday, scoring 13 runs. Will they do it again today? So if you look at the odds on this game, we have the Mariners short favorites at home, minus 125, total of 7.5 runs. So, Jenks, if you think Scherzer gives up a couple, and if you think this Blue Jays offense continues to rake, are you going with an over here, or are you going with a side?
Yeah, I think I'm going with an over here. And, you know, Max Scherzer, we talked about him and how I'm torn. You know how it is when you're rooting for someone, you're a fan of someone, but the numbers are the numbers, right? They tell you the story. And with Mad Max, as good as he's been, he hasn't been great with Toronto. So yeah, he has that incredible start in him maybe, but and the rest helps. There's no question about that. But we really just haven't seen it, so I think there's a possibility the Mariners could get to him early on in this game. I mean, on the road this season, his ERA is approaching 6. And then you have Luis Castillo, who has been very good when pitching at home this season. But here's the thing. He has faced the Jays twice this season, and they have gotten to him both times. So with you looking at how the Blue Jays performed last night, they know Castillo. Those bats got heated up in Game 3. Then I feel like we're looking at an over here.
Yeah, I think so as well. And especially with the total sitting at 7.5, you don't even need guys to implode. You just need both starters to give up a couple runs and the bullpen to give up a couple runs as well. Like, what kills the over is when pitchers are absolutely dominant. And, like, one side of the coin does not score any runs, which I don't think is going to be the case. Like, you mentioned those starts against Toronto for Luis Castillo. I know it was earlier on in the season, but even the start where he only gave up 3 earned runs against Toronto over 5 innings, you're like, hey, that's not that bad. He scattered 10 hits. So, like, he got out of a lot of trouble, and it's not like they were, you know, barely hitting the ball. And then the other one, he gave up 5 earned runs on 7 hits. So you're right. This lineup certainly has hit him before. I know that was, like, months ago. It was back in April and May. But still, the way that this Blue Jays offense is playing with a ton of confidence, even on the road, like, it's been such an anomaly that, you know, some of these teams have played better on the road than they have at home. So I think that the over is certainly in play here. But let's talk about a side. And I feel very torn on this one because my confidence is shaken after taking the Mariners last night and looking absolutely ridiculous since the Blue Jays put up a 13 spot. Do you have a leaning on a side here?
I would lean Mariners here. I know that Luis Castillo has been hit up this season, but then again, so has Max Scherzer, and maybe that evens it out. But ultimately, I still think the Mariners are the team to beat here. And if you look at history, if you have a 2-1 series lead, you go on to win the series 74% of the time. And also, I look at it this way. If you believe in a particular team, let's remember, this is the league championship series. Like, the other team that you're facing is also very good and got here for a reason. I thought Seattle might sweep based on the pitching matchup we had last night. It didn't work out. But also, these series are going to be competitive, so I would, at least for me, I would caution against, unless everything has changed for you in a big way, I would caution against just pushing away Seattle all of a sudden because they lost a game to a very good team that can get hot, and they got hot last night.
Yeah, the Mariners can get hot too. Like, we've seen that. So are you going to play the 7.5 in the full game, or are you going to play a first 5? I was searching for an over 7 for the team. I could only find it at -163. Don't love that. So, Jenks, how do you actually play this one?
I'm going to play first 5 over. I'm going to go first 5 over 3.5. And I found it at, what did I get here? First 5, 3.5. Over is -148. So I'm going to play that. I think both of these pitchers are going to struggle a little bit. And I like the full game as well. I think you can play over 7.5 and be fine. I know we like playing numbers down to 7 and hitting the over, but 7.5 is still low. I think we're going to see a lot of runs in this game.
Yeah. I think so as well. And, like, what we've seen from both these teams is they will have, like, one big inning where they really pile it on. Like, last night, they had several big innings. But it feels like one of those teams where, especially when you have as many home run hitters as both these teams do, and, like, half the guys who hit home runs last night weren't even home run hitters for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
But both these teams have a significant amount of power. Even when you play in a pitcher-friendly park, like, this was wild to me last night. Like, I thought the under would maybe be a play because it's colder weather. The Mariners Park is one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in all of baseball. But, like, some of these home runs were not even cheapies. Like, 414, 431, 406. So, like, these guys are cranking it. When we're talking about baseball, please don't use that out of context. So I feel like the over is probably my favorite play in this game. Anything else about the ALCS before we move on to the NLCS?
Anything else? No, I think we're good. I think we're good with the ALCS.
We good.
We good. No, I'm good. Let's talk NLCS.
Yeah, after I said cranky, it just went downhill from there. All right, so let's get to the NLCS. Game three between the Dodgers and the Brewers. The Dodgers have a 2-0 series lead, and boy, do they look good. Coming into this game, they have had to use very little of their bullpen, with Yamamoto going complete game. The game before, Blake Snell went 8 innings. So today, there's no rest for the Brewers lineup in that they now have to face Tyler Glasnow, who also has excellent strikeout stuff. The Brewers have not named a starter. It looks like they're going with a bullpen game. So logically speaking, Jinx,
yeah,
it looks like all the factors go in the favor of the Dodgers. But like Pat Murphy has said this, the manager of the Brewers, we've been counted out so many times before, and we've responded. So do the Brewers respond here?
Do the Brewers respond? No, I don't think so. I don't think they're going to. No, they're not going to. I want the Brewers to respond. I think it would be a great story, but they just don't have the arms. It would be so nice if Brandon Woodruff were back for this team, but
yeah,
look, he's not, so we can't sit here and say, oh, well, if this guy played, he's not playing. So you got Freddy Peralta. That was just such a, I don't want to say a death knell for this team, but when Peralta got touched up early on, then you're like, ah, oh, man, if you can't win with Peralta on the mound, now, today they're going with whom? Like, it's a bullpen game. Maybe Jose Quintana goes at some point, I think is what I've read. And that is your matchup against Tyler Glasnow when you're down 0-2 and going back to L.A. It just doesn't set up well for the Brewers. It doesn't feel that way.
All right, so now the question is, how do we actually play this? So it feels like the Dodgers are the play, but yeah, on the money line, you are not getting a discount. The Dodgers home favorites at minus 190. So I was trying to think of ways to maybe, you know, get creative with this. Mm-hmm. So usually one of the things that I do for the Dodgers is that you can combine their team total and their money line price, and usually you can get yourself like a nice price. Ah, that's just out of the range. So I did team total over 2.5 and the money line, that's minus 160. So we will probably have to go at 3.5, because here's the thing. If the Dodgers win the game, they're probably going to score, you know, 4 runs. So let's see what this price is. Okay, over 3.5 runs and the Dodgers on the money line is minus 125. Thoughts?
Wow, do that. Do that. That's good. I found I'm just trying to cheat the system here. Dodgers on
the
run
minus
line is
one.
Yeah, it's minus 150.
I knew it.
You knew it. I love these minus one plays. But I think Dodgers on the run line is a smart move. That's at plus money. It's a plus 115. But over 3.5 and Dodgers on the money line, what'd you say, minus 120? That's it?
Minus 125. Because, like, it goes, it correlates, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You'd think that if they score 4 runs, they're probably going to win a game. Unless this game is like a low scoring affair. Like if they win 3-1, obviously you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. But it's just these Dodgers bats have been so good. And it just doesn't feel like a great pitching matchup when the Brewers are already in a bullpen game situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't even seen much from Ohtani. So it's like once the first of the lineup starts to get going, because he's their leadoff guy. Like there is a reason where you normally put, you know, a guy that is going to get on base in the leadoff hole, because it just, you know, jumpstarts your whole offense. So if Ohtani can start getting on base, this is going to be a huge boon to a Dodgers lineup that's just as good at the top as it is at the bottom. Like with guys like Kike Hernandez, you know, Max Muncy is really good, even though I think he's towards the top half of the lineup. But like my point being is that like this offense has room to get better.
Oh, yes, it does. That's the scary thing. And just kind of like Vladdy got going last night after going 0-for-7 in the first 2 games of this series. I know Shohei's slump has lasted a little bit longer here, but man, when you have all of that talent that Shohei has, then it's just a matter of time, especially Shohei against a Brewers bullpen, which is good, but certainly not like going against one of their starters here. So that's the real dangerous thing if you're Milwaukee. You're like, oh God, what if this guy hits up?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like if you're looking at props, like Teoscar Hernandez has been on an absolute tear. He had 2 hits last game with 5 total bases. And we know he certainly has a lot of power. He was in the home run derby, and he's hit several home runs already in the last few games. Two home runs over the last several series this postseason. So it just feels like the Dodgers lineup is just too much. So let me ask you this. Obviously, the Brewers need to either win tonight or tomorrow, but do you think that they win a game in this series?
I don't know. I don't think so. I honestly, I think if they win a game, it'll be in game four. I don't think this sets up well for them going out west against Glasnow when you're going with a bullpen game. But I do think that, look, you got Shohei going for the Dodgers in game four. And nothing against Shohei. He's a very good pitcher. But also because he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. Like, and he was very good last time out against the Phillies. Had a quality start. I think 3 runs over 6 innings. But he hasn't been necessarily dominant because he hasn't had a lot of innings this year. So I think there's a possibility that, you know, maybe he doesn't go long in this game. The Dodgers do have some weakness in the bullpen, and maybe that's how Milwaukee pulls out a win.
Right, and again, the Brewers have been doubted for most of the season, and here they stand as one of the top four teams in Major League Baseball. All right, coming up next, it's time to see who can survive another week in the NFL. Our Survivor plays come your way next on the Daily Tip.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back, and it's time to play Survivor. Who wins outright in the NFL this week? It feels like a very simple question, but as we've seen in the NFL this year, there's been plenty of chaos, and it feels like there are very few teams that are absolutely dominant these days. So we will play that in a few minutes, but Jenks, over at our house, at the Buchanan Messenger residence,
okay.
Croctober continues.
Yes.
Where I have been continuing to make things in the crock pot. So today's menu is going to be chicken pot pie soup, which I am very excited about. And I was just thinking, like, how do I parlay this into, like, football talk? Because I understand some people are at home. They're like, Chelsea's talking about the crock pot again.
Easy.
So I was like, listen, how about we do NFL quarterbacks as crock pot recipes? So I've already come up with a few during the break. Number one, the very easiest one, Josh Allen has to be buffalo chicken dip in the crock pot.
Okay.
Don't know if you've ever made this, but very obviously, buffalo chicken has to go into Josh Allen, and it is a top-tier recipe, which makes a lot of sense for the reigning MVP. Next up, one of the more expensive recipes it feels like you can make in a crock pot, pot roast with a little barbecue sauce on top, has to be Patrick Mahomes. The guy has a $500 million deal, and pot roast is normally like $30. And you're like, wow, we can't have pot roast more than once a week unless mama hits some more parlays. And then finally, here's the last one I thought of, and feel free to sprinkle in some of your own. Baker Mayfield, I'm going to go with crock pot brisket mac and cheese because mac and cheese is a winner. You can say all the things that you want, but like mac and cheese, it's pretty simplistic. Like, it's not as good as the other meals, but everybody loves mac and cheese. And Baker Mayfield is a winner. And you add in some brisket there because you got to have some meat in your mac and cheese.
Yeah.
So, Jenks, how did I do? Do you like my quarterback to crock pot comparisons?
I love the comparisons, but you started talking about like mac and cheese. And I was like, mac and cheese is always. Like, that's a winner. You nailed that. It's always a winner. Those are some good recipes. More than anything, you just made me hungry.
Right?
Yeah. Well done. Send me some of that chicken pot pie stew or whatever that is. Put it in a box. Mm. Send it this way.
I'm sure it will taste amazing after 3 days in the post office system. All right, I got to ask Denton before we... it's David who's doing this. See, I thought this was Denton because I think Denton tried this recipe and failed. So we will see if David can do it. The chicken pot pie casserole with the Red Lobster biscuits on top. So, David, how do you plan to avoid the failure that Den had with this recipe?
I'm putting it in the oven, not the crock pot. Plain and simple. Go. I'm putting it in the oven, not the crock pot.
Oh, not everything works in the crock pot, Den. And I think you knew this. You made this mistake, and it was like throwing into triple coverage.
They lied to me. They put it in a crock pot, and they said it's a crock pot recipe. Shame on me for trusting somebody. This is why I have trust issues.
Yes, because everything you see on TikTok normally is very accurate. Yes, consider the source, Den. Consider the source. All right, let's get into some NFL talk, because I understand not everybody is a trad wife like me. What are you guys laughing about?
Oh, well, Denton dropped the 6-7, which was very...
6-7.
6-7. Just out of nowhere, it was very funny.
I wish I was there so I could, like, hit somebody. Because, like, I am getting so sick of this. Now it's everywhere, Jenks. I saw where the NFL tweeted this out yesterday. It's like the second we said it on air, everybody's like, oh, the algorithm knows. Everybody's going to be doing this. The NFL literally did this. And they, like, dubbed over, like, they did, like, Chris Collinsworth. And they, like, melded together him saying 6-7 and, like, a ref going like this. I'm like, oh, my God, when does it stop?
Jaden Daniels did this yesterday, like randomly talking about, he was talking about Bill, I believe, Bill Kroski Merritt, and he dropped in a 6-7 reference. Wild. I would not have known. And then I read through the comments. It was like 3/4 of the comments was like, I don't get it. I don't get it. What does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? It's crazy. Taking over.
Well, like, think about the NFL's like main demographic, which I think of like older guys who watch like the NFL on Fox. Like, they want to see like the old guys talking about football. Like, imagine saying 6-7 to like a 65-year-old guy. They ain't gonna know what that means.
Oh God. You don't want to say it to a 67-year-old guy? I mean, come on, it was right there.
I did that on purpose, Den.
You gotta do the hands too. You gotta do the hands.
I don't have to do anything. I hate I'm shaking my fists of Kids of the Day. The worst reference ever. And we will not be speaking about it ever again. And probably until next segment. All right, let's get to our Survivor picks.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
There can be only one.
Who will survive?
All right, you guys know the rules to Survivor in the NFL. The spreads don't matter. All you have to do is pick an outright winner. And if you're wondering if there is a tie and your team did not win the game, that counts as a loss as well. All right, gentlemen, so let's start with, I believe, Jenks. You're first on the docket. Who do you got in Survivor this week?
I don't even know where I am on my rundown, but it doesn't matter. You know I'm taking the Patriots. Come on. Come on. It has to be the Patriots. Like, they're going to... I don't know if they're going to cover the number. I just feel like this number is too good to be true. But it doesn't matter. This is Survivor. So, a win is a win. We got Mike Vrabel. Revenge spot. We know this. The Titans, I don't know if you guys have looked. They're not a good football team. New England, it is.
Unfortunately, I have looked. I have been forced to watch the Titans here in Nashville because those are the only games that are broadcast here. And I was just thinking, I think if Mike Vrabel was a crockpot recipe, he would be steak tips. He has to be some type of, like, steak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just a whole bunch of man. All right, so I am not going to disagree with you. I do think the Patriots are going to win outright. All right, so next up for me, normally I'm not a huge fan of taking divisional games, but, like, this one makes the most sense this week. The Raiders are bad. The Chiefs are getting back Rashee Rice. And it also feels like the Chiefs are trending in the right direction to where, like, maybe they win this game in a close way, but it is a home game for the Chiefs. They are 3-3. They need wins. There is no room to be getting cute with things. I think they win this game outright. They are 12-point favorites, so I'm going to go with Kansas City. David, looks like we are on the same page here. Why do you like the Chiefs?
Oh, no, this is my new shtick, Chelsea. I'm just going to point everything that Chelsea said is what I'm going to say. So go, Chelsea, go. Chiefs are go. I think Rashee Rice is going to make all the difference in this game. Now you have to worry about Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy. To me, it looked like Isaiah Pacheco started to get a little oomph behind his runs as well. It just makes sense that they're going to do gnarly things to the Raiders.
Right, and like, I don't think we even have to explain ourselves that much. It is a 12-point spread. This is the largest spread on the entire slate this weekend, so the odds makers tend to agree with us as well. All right, Dylan, you are next up. I thought you would go Patriots, but you did not.
No, I don't know. I have a weird thing about picking my own team, but I like this matchup even Same. More. The Giants, their only two wins have come at home, and Denver in their last three games have held teams all under 17 or less. I just think this is a team that's relying, the Giants are relying on two rookies, and Denver's just an elite defense. I think they're just going to shove them down.
I feel like the under is a good play in this game as well. Set at 40. Unders for the Broncos have been a cash cow, because here's the thing, even when Broncos win games, it's like they run the ball into oblivion, and it's not like their offense is lighting up things. But I do think they're the much better overall team as opposed to the Giants. All right, Den, another big favorite, at least when it comes to the betting numbers. Who do you like this week?
I'm going to take the Packers over the Cardinals this week. I think the Packers, a lot of people are jumping off because they've looked a little lesser in the past few weeks, but I'm still a big believer in the Packers. Then on the flip side, with the Cardinals, Marvin Harrison Jr. is in concussion protocol, so we're uncertain if he's going to go this weekend. Kyler Murray didn't play last week. He was limited at practice early so far this week. And even on top of that, it's mid to late October, guys, and that's when teams start to realize that Kyler Murray is short, and if you just put your hands up at the line of scrimmage, he can't see over anyone. So I like the Packers in this one. I think Michael Parsons has a big day as well.
I feel like the Cardinals are a team that I kind of get nervous to bet against, because it does feel like they are a scrappy team. So, again, we're not talking about spreads here, though, but this is a road game. Like, I don't love that as well, but I think all of us have probably gone against, like, some of the basic rules, because I don't know if you guys do this. I'm not a huge fan of taking road teams, and I'm not a huge fan of taking divisional matchups, but sometimes there are no other matchups, so I guess it makes sense. Does anybody else have a sabotage factor for any of these teams mentioned?
I actually don't like the Detroit one. Or not the Detroit one. The Broncos one. Broncos did not look good at all last week against the Jets. Granted, it was in England. I'll give them that. Mm-hmm. But you're just going to completely discount the Scataboo initiative? Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, I think he has a point in the fact that the Broncos offense has not looked good. And, like, ideally for me, when I take a team in Survivor, I want a no-sweat win. And I'll say this. Like, the Broncos have won a lot of games, but some of them have been very close. And it feels like they're not a high-end offense. They've only scored more than, like, 21 points once this year. Dylan? Rebuttal?
Yeah.
No?
I mean, I get what you guys are saying, but you are relying on rookies. I get Scataboo's good, and he's looked good in some of these games, but I think Denver's got an elite defensive line. Their secondary is going to give Jackson Dart all sorts of fits. I just think this could get a real messy game for the Giants.
I do think it's going to be messy, but again, like, the Chiefs are right there, Dylan. You didn't want the Chiefs? Why not?
I'm a Pats fan. I could never back the Chiefs.
The hate runs deep Fair. For the Kansas City Chiefs. And I feel like a lot of people.
Throw it up.
All right, where are the cutoff sleeves? I feel like if you have a Patriots sweatshirt, it almost has to have like, oh, it does. There you go. There you go. The Patriot way. That's probably been trademarked by Jordan Hudson somewhere. So there you go. There's your 5 cents, Jordan. All right, hour three is next. We talk about some of the biggest storylines in the NFL with Chris Mack, who previews the Steelers game for us as well. It's next on the Daily Tip.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.